Hi, I'm Anne-Marie Zanzel, coach, ordained minister, grandma, mom of four, and a queer woman married to my lovely, gorgeous wife after I came out later in life. This is Coming Out and Beyond LGBTQIA Plus Stories, a podcast for everyone exploring identity, queerness, and what it means to live more truthfully, no matter our age or stage. We share stories of coming out, starting over, resiliency, how to navigate relationships, grief, joy, and building lives that actually fit us as human beings. No labels required, just curiosity, courage, and a little faith in this journey. Welcome. Let's dive in. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Coming Out and Beyond LGBTQIA Plus Stories. My favorite person is here today. Hi, Barb Rowlandson.
Aw, shucks. Hi, Anne-Marie Zanzel. How you doing today?
Doing good. And I'm so excited about our topic today because we're talking about dating later in life. And I know that so many of us can relate to. It really feels like a daunting journey. But Barb today is going to help us navigate it all with clarity and confidence.
Yeah, we'll just make the whole dating thing a complete and total breeze.
Yes, that's what we're going to do today. I hope you noticed our sarcasm there. Before we get started, Barb, let's talk a little bit about your journey from coaching later in life of women, which you've been doing with me now for several years now, to really starting to focus more on dating and relationships. Why? Why have you done this? Why did you want to do this?
Well, in the years that I've spent with you coaching our community when it comes to, first of all, ending catalyst relationships, so navigating breakups, and then entering into the world of dating, what I noticed is that we bring a lot of pre-baked beliefs to our dating experience. And sometimes those beliefs can be very rigid and maybe not quite rooted in reality. So there's a certain mindset that you need to have when you step out into the dating world that requires some flexibility and a willingness to take some risks. And these are two things that folks have real challenges in doing, not just in this area of their lives, but in lots of areas of their lives. So as you know, I recently became a registered psychotherapist qualifying in the province of Ontario. Yay.
So, congratulations.
Yes, thank you. So as I continued my education journey in counseling psychology and started to learn about different modalities that help us to increase our psychological flexibility, I realized how applicable that is to the dating experience. Any kind of experience where we're going through a transition from one state to another, or where that requires vulnerability from us, really also requires us to be able to be willing to fall on our faces sometimes, right? Dating isn't just like, you know, once and done, yay, I met my match kind of thing. Like, we're going to meet lots of people who we don't drive with, right?
And Barb literally has fallen on her face.
Oh my God. And you've witnessed it so many times, so many times.
No, but she tells a very funny story about one of her first dates after dating her, after she broke up with her catalyst, and how she literally fell off the bar stool.
I literally fell off the bar. It was not a comfortable bar stool, in my defense. Thank you very much. That was the same date where I also was so nervous that I talked about barfing in the kayak. Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that.
On the first date, maybe not, right?
Not a great topic on a first date. I have to say. So that didn't result in the second date, if you were curious.
Yes. So let's dive right in. And I've got a couple of questions for you right now. So dating in our 20s or beyond can be so different from dating in our 20s. So from your perspective, what are some of the unique challenges that women dating women face at this stage of life?
Boy. Okay. So for the same reason why it can be difficult to make new friendships later in life, it's the same thing for when it comes to dating. It can be hard just to even find time to make those connections. as we become older and we have a lot more responsibilities and obligations within our lives, we become very busy. We've got work. We've got, you know, to take the kids to soccer practice. We've got to take care of mom and dad, maybe in the retirement home, but there's a million things pulling us in a million different directions. So we can become very comfortable in just our very small little sphere of people that we already know. Branching out of that and making new friendships requires some time, some dedication, some willingness, some energy. Mm-hmm. These are all things we have in abundance when mm-hmm. we're in our teens and 20s, right? We got nothing but time, basically.
Right. We have time to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So when we're adults, it's more challenging to carve out space to do those things. And it's not just that either. It's we haven't done it in so long that it can all of a sudden feel like very foreign. Or, oh, I haven't done this. I haven't made a new friend in 15 years.
And for so many of our women, this is the first time they're dating another woman.
Yes.
And oftentimes we find that a lot of times the women in our community often marry their first boyfriend out of high school or out of college, or they have extremely limited dating experience before they got married. And so now here they're coming out and all of a sudden they're thrown into an experience that they have very little experience to draw upon from 30 years ago.
Exactly. Exactly. You're spot on with that. Their dating history is not exactly varied or robust. They didn't have a lot of those experiences of going out and flirting and just meeting with other people. And lots of times we hear from the women we work with, they meet their future husband at a very young age and they pick him because, he just seems like the nicest guy. So I'm going to go with him.
And also, too, one of the things that when people are dating later in life, like when we date in our 20s, it's to mate. We date to mate for life in our 20s. Mm-hmm. But sometimes in our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, that's not the direction we're going in, right?
No, exactly. In fact, a lot of times, and this is true for straight women as it is for queer women, after getting out of a period of a long-term relationship, they are not necessarily, and I don't want to speak for everybody, ready to jump into another serious long-term relationship. And as we know, our population of women, if they're coming out later in life, what's going on for them? They've got that second adolescence that's happening. Getting tied down very quickly isn't necessarily top of the priority list for a lot of women. Now, the caveat is, of course, there are those women who wish to go from one long-term relationship to another. And there's a whole other set of reasons for that.
But let's move on a little bit. So one of the things that you're big about is talking about values, because we believe that values is a compass or a lighthouse for the people we work with. So can you explain to our audience why it's so critical to connect with our personal values before we even start a new relationship or begin dating?
So another hallmark of dating later in life or coming out of a long-term relationship when you're a little farther along in life is a lot of women can feel a little bit disconnected from themselves. I don't remember who I am without the context of my former partner. And it's very common to see this period of like feeling lost. I know I experienced it for sure. Of like, okay, well, what do I like? What am I about? What do I want? It kind of hits you with a little bit of an existential crisis, right? When you come out of a very long-term relationship. And so reconnecting with what is most important to you, your core values, is really, really important, not just for you, because, you know, they impact all the areas of your life, all the kinds of decisions you make, but certainly are important for future romantic partnership relationships. We're not just out there to look for anybody who might be interested in us. Ideally, and especially because we're so time poor and we don't want to waste time, you know, spending time with people who aren't right for us, we have a very solid sense of ourselves that is truly important to us, so that when we step into the dating world, then we know we can broadcast that this is what's important to me, this is who I am. And that will ideally attract people who share the same kinds of values as you have.
Hi, it's Anna Empey.
And I'm Amory Zanzel. We are part of the production team of Secure Lesbian Bonds.
You love each other, but lately it feels like you're speaking different emotional languages. Conversations turn into arguments or silence. You feel alone even when you're right next to her.
But you're not broken. You're just stuck in a painful cycle, and there's a way out. Strengthening Love is an online relationship course created specifically for lesbian couples. It blends emotion-focused therapy, trauma-informed tools, and real-world support to help you reconnect without blame or shame.
Inside, you'll learn how to recognize your emotional triggers, communicate with compassion, and rebuild intimacy that lasts. It's flexible, self-paced, and completely affirming of your relationship.
And for less than 2 therapy sessions, you get lifetime access to a full relationship roadmap with worksheets, partner exercises, and guidance from queer women who get it. Start today at healthylesbianrelationships.com.
Because your love deserves to feel safe, seen, and strong again.
So I've heard you describe values floating devices in the dating pool. Can you clarify that a little bit for people? So many of us have a sense of values, but how can we truly get clear on what they are?
So first of all, to clarify and to get really clear about what your values are, I would really encourage you to, you can Google a values list and you're going to get a result of, I don't even know how many values lists of at least 100 values words. Another way that you can do this is take one of our dating workshops. Going ahead and finding a list of values to get you started and identifying, circle the ones that resonate with you. And if there's anything that's not on the values list you find online, then you can add to that. Now, why is it a flotation device? Well, first of all, we call it the dating pool because it's something we can jump into. We don't necessarily find the bottom right away. It can be murky and we can be treading water in there for a while as we make the effort to look for somebody who might be an ideal partner. And our values are what keeps us afloat in the sense that we stay aligned and true to who we are. So while we're out there in a sea of people and many, many, many are not the right person for us, we know we have what at our core makes us us. And that's what keeps us afloat and not letting other people kind of drag us down to somewhere we don't want to be.
And I do find that women, when they're first dating, I think it takes them a while to get to what you're describing, because a lot of times we so want to connect with another woman that we will start dating, we'll meet somebody, have a date with them, and it may not be the right person for us, but we're so horny to connect because of that second adolescence, that a lot of times we may, you know, put our values aside a little bit to experience this relationship, but then ultimately it doesn't work out because you're not aligned. You told me this story once about somebody said they were 420 friendly. And you were like, I'm okay with that. I'm absolutely okay with that. So 420 friendly means somebody smokes marijuana or uses marijuana relationally. But then Barb soon discovered that they were basically what's called a wake and baker. They were somebody that was using pot all day long. And Barb knew right away that their values and her values just didn't align.
And you do run into some folks who online, like this person, who maybe didn't have a lot of self-awareness, or we just had different ideas of what recreational use meant. We had different definitions of what they were. In the very beginning, I was like, hey, you know, go ahead and smoke if that's your choice, but not so long as you're not using every day, right? And at that point, that person was dishonest with me, actually, and was a daily user. You will run into people who are dishonest. You will run into people who maybe don't have a lot of self-awareness, and you may have entanglements with them. You may have brief relationships with them, as I did with this woman, by the way. And it was a great learning experience for me. You know, there was a lot of things that were great about her. She was kind, compassionate. The sex was hot. It was great. But this one core thing where we had this very different lifestyle difference of opinion on how you should live that ultimately didn't make it us a good choice for each other. Now, do I regret that experience? No, I don't. I don't regret that experience.
Because you have a very healthy attitude about dating in the sense that like you realize that from every relationship that goes right and wrong, you always learn something about and often you learn something about yourself. Learn a lot about yourself. And it's when you take the attitude of dating as a learning experience and an opportunity for growth, not for this heat-seeking missile to find your person. You know, that's when dating become really miserable. You know, if you're really like so focused on one goal and one goal only, which we hear it all the time. I need to find my person. I need to find my person. We understand that need, but we also understand the needs that you need other things. For example, community.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with dating to A, find community, or B, just to have experiences. Not every person we date is going to be, you know, it's not going to amount to a long-term relationship. If you just want to go out there and get yours, go do it. There's lots of other people who are wanting to do that too. And there's nothing wrong with that. Go do that. However, great to be transparent about that as well. As you start dating, I'm like, hey, I don't want anything too serious, but I'm looking for somebody to have fun with. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So once we understand our values, it's about transitioning them into what we're looking for. So you have a really practical tool for this. It's a 3-column list. Can you walk us through this framework?
Sure, sure. This is something I do with all of my clients in coaching who are stepping out into the dating world. We do a values identification exercise. And then we also create Barb's famous list, which defines wants, needs, and deal breakers. So I'm that nerd who like opens up the Excel spreadsheet, makes 3 columns, and just make a list in each one. In the want column, these would be things that are nice to have, right? It would be nice if she had brown eyes. It would be nice if she were taller than me. It would, like, just things that maybe things that you're attracted to, things you like, but it's not a deal breaker if they don't have these things.
My wife's nice to have was a tall woman. I'm 6 inches shorter than her. It was a want. It was definitely not a need or a deal breaker. But that's some of those things that you can think about. Like, what would you want? Oftentimes we end up being with people that don't meet our wants list.
Yeah. Yeah.
They do meet our needs and they do make our needs and deal breakers list.
Yeah. It's just nice to have column. So great. It's just like the cherry on the sundae if they've got these qualities. The next one, the next middle column is the needs to have. These are the things they have to bring to the relationship for if you want this to be a relationship that lasts. And that can look like a lot of things. Needs to, I'm going to say, have a job. Mm-hmm. That's one. That's an example on my list. And that would include maybe people who are also retired. I think a person who's retired might find me really boring. Because I work a lot and I go to school. So I don't really have quite the liberty that somebody who might wish to go on vacations and things like that. Nothing against people who are retired or dating older women. Absolutely love older women. But that's a need for me. So your needs are going to look different than my list and your list. So give it a good think about what it is you need from a future partner if it's going to go the distance. And then the third column is the deal breaker. Right? So deal breakers are, I mean, it's self-explanatory. For me, it might be somebody who likes to gamble. For some people, it's smoking. It can be a lot of different things. It's really as individual as the person who is making that list. Now, I will say this. This list is a lot. So a lot of things will stay the same on your list and some things will change over time. So it's a good idea to revise the list, say maybe twice a year. As you're going through your dating journey. Like you said earlier, with every person that we date, we learn more about what we want or don't want, and we learn more about ourselves. And sometimes we run into deal breakers and we didn't even know that deal breaker existed, right?
We learn as we go along. We do have this as a PDF for you. So if you want to get a copy of the PDF, it's attached in our show notes or it's below this YouTube video. Please take a look at it. The biggest obstacle is often our own mindset. You talk about limiting beliefs. What are these and how do they show up specifically in dating and later in life?
That's a great question. So limiting beliefs are those pre-baked assumptions that we bring with us to an experience. So we can usually identify them because they involve some extreme language. I always never... This is awful. Like any time where it's like extreme good or extreme bad, it's usually a limiting belief. Limiting beliefs are created by our tricky old brains to keep us safe, right? They usually are based on a past experience where we got hurt or been taught and handed down to us from somebody who has been hurt. And those beliefs, which aren't necessarily rooted in reality, become our truth. And where they can become problematic is when they start limiting, this is why we call it limiting, when they start limiting our ability to make change, be flexible, have new experiences, try new things, and keep us in our lives pretty small and sometimes miserable. So that is a very common thing to the human experience, by the way, and not just about dating, but about all kinds of things.
You love each other, but lately, it feels like you're speaking different emotional languages. Strengthening Love is a powerful relationship course created just for lesbian couples. You'll learn how to break painful patterns, communicate with compassion, and feel truly seen again together. Created by LGBTQ+ experts, it's affirming, practical, and designed for real-life connection. It's a one-time payment, lifetime access, and real change. Visit HealthyLesbianRelationships.com to enroll today, because your love deserves more than just getting by. It deserves to grow.
Well, what I hear a lot from the women and when they start approaching dating, and of course, so many of our women also hear experiences from women who've gone on before them. And a lot of times there's a lot of negativity around online dating and dating in general. Like, we'll hear people say stuff like, I'm too old for the bar scene, or all the good ones are already taking. What ends up, you know, that old saying, our words become our actions becomes our destiny. So how do these beliefs, like I'm too old for the bar scene or all the good ones are taken, how do these beliefs become self-fulfilling prophecies?
Well, again, really great observation there. Mm-hmm. When we have an assumption, then we're going to follow up with a pattern of behavior that confirms that assumption. And another thing we're going to do is we're going to scan the world for proof that our assumption is true. That's called confirmation bias, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of your listeners will understand that term is like, I have it akin to, you know, the performer who stands on stage and they scan the entire audience and everybody's clapping and cheering. And there's one guy who's sitting in the audience like this. And a performer who has some insecurity about, you know, their abilities as an actor, will that one grumpy Gussie will confirm their insecurity.
But I understand. Yeah, I understand that, because like I will get emails upon emails about wonderful things I've done, and I get one grumpy email. I'm like, that's it. That's all I focus on. You know what right. I mean? It's like, yeah. I don't so much anymore, but I completely understand that confirmation bias, because then it's saying, well, I'm not, I can't do this. I'm not good at this. You know, even though I can get 30 emails of like praising me, that one bad one, I have learned to like let those go. But I completely understand that. And I bet our listeners can also identify areas in their life where they do that as well.
Mm. So the challenge there is to, if we find that, you know, we're having extreme language around a thought that is a bias and a limiting belief, then how we counteract that is to start getting really curious about our beliefs. When did that belief start? When did you first hear that message? Mm-hmm. Who taught it to you? Or what experience taught that to you? What evidence do you have it's true beyond that?
And those are great questions, Barb.
Yeah, just sort of like, we almost want to treat it like okay, our limiting belief is the hypothesis, and we are scientists, and now we're going to go and test that limiting belief for evidence to see if that's true. And quite often what will happen is if we engage in that process through therapy, through coaching, what we come to understand that life and circumstances is much more malleable than what we give it credit for, and that things are far more possible than we've allowed ourselves to believe. And we also begin to understand the pain that's behind the limiting belief. We begin to understand what we're protecting our hearts from. And I have bad news for you. We can't protect ourselves from disappointment. We can't protect ourselves from those people on the dating apps who ghost us, or maybe who catfish us a little bit. We can't protect ourselves from a first bad date or falling off the bar stool.
For the uninitiated, can you define catfishing and ghosting, please?
So ghosting, so both of these I'm talking about relationally too, on the process of online dating and using a dating app. And ghosting will be when you're having some conversation with someone and it seems to be going great, and then they poof, they just disappear and you never ever hear from them again. And it's their indirect way of saying, I'm no longer interested in you. But often what they'll leave it off, like with a, you know, things seem to be going great, we're having a great conversation, and she just disappeared. Well, you know, she probably didn't have the ability within herself to end things in a more dignified way. Not everybody has that capability.
Totally about her. It is not about you at all.
1,000%.
Emery and Barb said this is about her. Remember that.
We just don't know. Maybe she's not interested in you. Maybe she got hit by a bus. Maybe she got the flu. We don't even know. It's not about us when somebody ghosts us. It's about them. Mm-hmm. And catfishing is when somebody goes online and creates a profile and pretends to be somebody that they are not. And that can be, sometimes they might use their own picture and say a lot of things about them that aren't true, or themselves that aren't true. Or sometimes they adopt a completely different persona altogether. On some dating apps, especially ones where there's both men and women, so we can often find men who catfish and pretend to be women because for some bizarre reason they want to be with a lesbian. I don't get it. So these are circumstances that are beyond our control and can sort of like lure us in a little bit and then leave us feeling really disappointed.
But I wanted to address that just to say that this is not about you. Mm-hmm. This is a shared common humanity experience of many people who date online or start to date through dating apps where they meet somebody over the internet. And this, unfortunately, is a common experience. And so just remembering what Barb said is that this has nothing to do with you. If someone has tried to catfish you or someone has ghosted you, it is a really common experience. So we don't want anyone to think, oh God, I'm the only person this, or feel any shame around it. It's such a common experience. So let's move from this mental preparation to the actual date itself. So for many, the first date, oh my God, brings on so much anxiety. What are some of your favorite practical tips or exercises to deal with those butterflies?
I've finally been talking to somebody and she seems amazing and we're just clicking and yay, we've secured that first date. And it's like, wee, yay, I'm so excited. Over a little bit of time, that excitement can turn into, I'm so nervous. What if she doesn't like me? What if I show up and
not attracted to her?
What if she has bad breath? We do a lot of forecasting in that stage as well, right? Or fortune telling. So instead of thinking about the future and what might go wrong, instead, it's a really good idea to try and stay in the present. And this is where if you've been cultivating some mindfulness practices, then lean into those. And if you haven't been cultivating some mindfulness practices, this is a great to start. So when you have those kinds of thoughts, here's some things that I like. One of my favorites comes from acceptance and commitment therapy. This is a modality I'm very aligned with, is when we start to have a thought that starts spinning in our brain. God, what if she's, what if I, what if she, worry, worry, stop. Thank you, brain. Thank you, Brain, for trying to keep me safe. I appreciate that. I appreciate you giving me that thought. That's great. Okay, you can stop now. It's okay. I'm safe. And what that does is sort of like personifies our brain and creates a degree of separation between ourselves and the thought that we're experiencing. And it acknowledges the thought. I see that you exist, thought. I'm not ignoring you. Thank you for being here. And now you can go and take a seat in the back because I don't need you anymore. I'm safe. Another really good one, the 5-4-3-2-1 exercise. A lot of listeners will probably be familiar with that. Name 5 things I can see, 4 things I can hear, 3 things I can touch, 2 things I can smell, 1 thing I can taste. Those that just taking a few minutes to stop and do that exercise brings you back right into the present. I'm curious to know, Anne-Marie, what's your favorite, like, bring you back into the moment exercise? Do you have one?
I think my favorite bring myself back into the moment exercise is just to take a pause, stop, close my eyes and breathe. And just really, really just focusing on I'm here, I'm now, and also trying to get my brain to calm down a little bit. Because I have learned to see my brain as another extension of my identity. And that its job is to keep me safe. So a lot of times my brain is not exactly right. The things that you suggest of, like, you know, the 5-4-3-2-1 is helpful. I love to take a shower when I'm really anxious and let everything goes down the drain. Yep. I really like to do that.
And smart thing to do after that shower is turn on that cold water. Is the cold water will really help us to, like, physiologically will calm our vagus nerve, which helps us to feel a lot calmer. If you don't have access to the shower, splashing cold water on your face, like, people don't do that for no reason. Even before we knew the science behind it, people would put cold water on their face when they feel anxious, right? It's because it calms us down. Or an ice pack on your chest or behind your neck can also have a very similar experience.
All right, so we're on the date, Barb. How do we move beyond small talk and foster a genuine connection? What are some of the things that we should be focusing on?
So something I really encourage folks to do, especially on a first date, is, and you might want to practice it ahead of time, is learn how to ask open-ended questions. Open-ended questions will help to keep the conversation rolling. And it also gets people to talk about themselves, which is most people's favorite subject. So, it gives folks a little bit of direction as well.
Yep. And like, Barb, do you like Italian food?
Yes.
Barb? Can you describe the best Italian meal you ever had in your life?
Oh my God, let me tell you all about it. I had it when I was in Rome and it was like, Now that launches me into another story about travel and the things that I've experienced. It allows, gives you cues for more questions that you can ask. And it also can help direct you into a topic where maybe you would like to share a little bit something about your travel experiences or your culinary experiences. You see how this can, like, really keep the conversation going and not put the burden of having to think of the next thing to say onto the person you're with.
And also, we want to mention that occasionally you don't have to worry about any of that, because you connect with that person so quickly and you can have a really nice conversation. Now, we're also going to say this. Even if you connect with that person really great, they still may not be a love interest.
Absolutely.
And that's what's hard for us to wrap our heads around sometimes. You may meet this woman. She is dynamic. She is incredible. You're laughing. You're having a great time. But when you leave the date, at the end of the date, you're like, she was great, but I don't know if I feel any attraction to her. Now, sometimes you have to date somebody more than one date to feel that attraction. I mean, I don't have a huge dating history with women, but I do have to get to know somebody before I feel attraction.
And I think for folks like yourself and others who feel that they need that time and familiarity, it's about feeling secure enough to be vulnerable with your feelings. And once you feel secure, then it's like, okay, I'm safe to open myself up to this person and make the bond a little bit deeper or a little bit closer. That's totally normal. In fact, in addition to all the other things I do, since 2018, I've been a marriage officiant. I've married, I don't even know how many couples. And they seem to fall into two main categories. One is the thunderclap couple. Boom, they meet. They see each other across a crowded room. That's my wife. And or they go on that first date, and the first date lasts 72 hours, and they never stop talking. And, mm-hmm. you know, awesome. So there's
That's
the thunderclap.
Myself and my wife.
Yes.
We did have a 72-hour first date. And then Good. We've never not talked since then.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
I hope you stayed hydrated.
Yes.
And then, of course.
A little lightheaded in that time, but okay.
I bet you were. So the second category of couple that I often marry are what I call the slow boat couple. The ones who have a very long, slow, gradual connection that forms. They are often friends for a very long time first. Sometimes that's their story starts with one or the other person who's had some kind of tragedy or some kind of vulnerability that makes them a little bit hesitant to leap in. And the other person is just extraordinarily patient and they just
hang
sort
in
of
there.
Chug along. And that's okay too. These are both really valid paths to relationship, right?
And now that I think about that, that's also part of my relationship as well. I was just leaving my marriage. My wife and I were together 5 years before we got married. My wife, she's Southern. She goes, she says, I hung in there like a hair in a biscuit.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the best laid plans and when things go sideways. So you refer to these as dating disasters. What's the best way to handle an unexpected mishap, like falling off the bar stool or forgetting your wallet or you were so nervous you locked your keys in the car? That's hard to do these days, but some of us still can do it depending on what kind of car we have.
Hey, you know, like all kinds of different things can happen. You forget your wallet and you go to the restaurant or you plan to go to a fancy restaurant and oopsie, they're closed on Tuesdays and it's Tuesday. So really good thing to lead with is just being vulnerable. You know, hey, you know what? I'm so sorry. I really wanted this date to be special tonight. And it looks like I'm feeling really disappointed. Share how you feel about it. And usually when we are vulnerable with our feelings, good people, the right people will hold us in that and also be vulnerable as well. And maybe, you know, this is an opportunity too to test out what your problem solving skills are like together. Shoot, you know, so how quickly can you roll and pivot into something else?
And I would assume also it's an opportunity to see how the potential partner might handle stress too, right? Exactly.
So something I wouldn't advise would be to go on and on and on about blaming or finding fault or, oh, I can't believe what kind of restaurant shuts on a Tuesday night. Don't they like money? I'm so disappointed. Oh, I'm so, when you start to ruminate, you're just leaving the other person. You're creating a whole kind of downer for the whole experience and leaving a really sort of not great impression with the other person about how you deal with adversity.
Barb, this has been so insightful. Thank you so much. And I want to ask you one more question before we say goodbye. If you have to leave our listeners with one key message about dating later in life, what would it be?
Don't make yourself smaller to fit anyone else's expectations. If somebody's making you uncomfortable, if they want to do something that you're really not okay with, you don't have to be a part of it. It's okay. It's okay. You may have, especially if you're coming out of a long-term relationship where there has been lots of compromise or putting your own needs on the back burner, it can be really challenging to step up for ourselves and say, I want this or I don't want this. And it can feel like a very weak muscle if you haven't exercised that in a long time. Dating is a great time to exercise that muscle of saying no and putting up boundaries. It's okay. And these are with people who you're not really heavily invested in. So don't be afraid to listen to your gut. And again, just don't shrink yourself so that you fit someone else's expectations because you're dating for you, not for them.
That's beautiful. I couldn't say it better myself. If you are interested in to learn more about Barb and her coaching in the dating world, especially if you're a later in life lesbian, you can go to her website, lavenderdating.com, find out a little bit about Barb and what she offers. And Barb, I want to thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom with us today. This has been so helpful, and I've learned a lot.
Well, I always love being on the pod, so thank you so much for having me today.
You've been listening to Coming Out and Beyond, LGBTQIA+ Stories with Anne-Marie Zanzel. New episodes of the Coming Out and Beyond podcast drop every other Friday. You can tune in at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and at annemariezanzel.com. Be sure to hit subscribe when tuning in so you never miss an episode. And for more resources, articles, videos, and a free downloadable guide for coming out later in life, visit annemariezanzel.com.